listening to Vet Candy.
Hi, this is Dr. Jessica Turner, and you are listening to Living Well with Dr. Jessica. This is your one stop for all things health and wellness, where we meet with the best of the best within the fields. And when I say it's everything wellness, you guys, today is just a perfect example of what I mean with that, because so often we think of nutrition or exercise when you think of wellness, but we are going to dive into a topic today that I think most will agree has a huge impact on overall well-being, and it's parenting. And I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. This is actually our second time recording this episode. And I keep joking that the reason that happened is because in the matter of time that I met with our guests originally, I already have a new problem that I'm hoping she's going to help me tackle today. So I know everyone could relate with the roller coaster that sometimes parenthood feels like. So I cannot wait to introduce Maria Sanders. She is a licensed social worker and a certified parent coach, something I never knew existed until I met her the first go round. And she's also a wife and mom to two little girls. And so I can't wait for y'all to hear what she has to share, because I can already tell you it's some good stuff. So just get ready, grab a cup of coffee or whatever you want. And I'm going to turn it over to Maria and let her just introduce herself and share a little bit about how she came to be a parenting coach.
Thanks for having me, Jessica. And I'm so excited to have all the listeners here today too. So how did I come about this? Well, it kind of, in a way, happened by accident. So I am a licensed social worker. Like you said, I was a school social worker for about 15 years, working in both public and independent schools. And I also did something called early intervention, which is supporting families who have children between the ages of 0 and 3 who have some sort of developmental delay. And I served both as a teacher, because I'm certified as a teacher also, and I served as a social worker. And then I had my own kids. And it was during that time that they were little that I found myself thinking, oh, you know what? I got this. I've been a social worker, a teacher, a camp counselor, a big sister, you know, you name it, a babysitter, everything. And I thought, I've got this, until those little two kids arrived and I was in the bathroom in the basement crying to my husband saying, we need help. And I got some great support, and it really transformed my relationship with my kids and our ability to communicate and connect. And at that time, I was also figuring out, what do I want to do next? I took a break from working so that I could be home with the girls, and I had an opportunity to decide which path I wanted to take. And I really thought parent coaching was exactly where I could blend all of my experience together.
That's so awesome that you were able to recognize that need within yourself and reach out for help, for one, because I feel like so often we stay stuck in that place where we don't know what to do, but we don't know where to go from there. And I think that's why I'm so excited about today's call, because I do think that this idea of parenting coaching is completely new to so many of us. And I couldn't help when you were sharing about how you had this sense of confidence going into parenthood because of all these things that you kind of had under your belt. I was the total opposite. I didn't do any of those things. I was the youngest, not only within my immediate family, but I was the youngest cousin. I never babysat. I never did anything in that capacity. And I had no clue what I was doing when I became a mom. And then to become a mom to two right off the bat with having twins, I feel like I needed help from day one. And so I just think it's so refreshing to know that there's resources out there that most parents probably don't even realize are there.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Thank you. If you are like me, you want to improve your skills, and that means improving your clinical confidence. That's why Vet Candy created a master course in respiratory disease. The master course is taught by a board-certified criticalist and delivers a thorough evaluation of the science and clinical practice skills needed to master respiratory disease from diagnosis and management to client counseling. Plus, when you complete the course, you earn a certificate of completion as a certified respiratory educator and exclusive tools to celebrate, recognize, and share your accomplishment. And what's even more exciting? The course is free and provides RACE and New York State approved continuing education credits. This master course is brought to you by Trudell Animal Health, the makers of the AeroCat Chamber. You can start helping your patients breathe better by taking it for free today at myvetcandy.com/respiratory.
What is the most common thing that people come to you for? I guess you would say problem or struggle.
Oh gosh, I get this question so much, and it's so funny because I still, after all these years, still don't know what to say because the challenges may sound the same in some ways because it always has something to do with difficulty communicating and disciplining my child. But because I know all the nuances of the parents' relationship, because I, you know, as I work with them, I learn more. It just looks so different. No one family is like another family. So it's kind of hard to clump it all together. But if I had to, it's often around communication and discipline.
Yes, communication. Man, that has been an area that has just been such an eye-opener for me for the last couple of years. Not only with becoming a parent, but within the workspace and within my marriage, I have found that so many problems that they just arise because of lack of communication. And what I've noticed with my girls, even though they're identical twins, they are night and day personality wise. And I always joke that one is like a mini me. She has the same, I never want to call them like struggles or weaknesses, but we struggle with the same things. You know, I could already see that she struggles with perfectionism and kind of know how her brain works. I know how to talk to her, but my other one is totally different, like than any of us within the home. And so sometimes when I'm talking to her, I'm thinking about an incident yesterday with homework, to be honest with you. I get to this point where I'm like, I don't know how to talk to you. Like, it's almost like speaking another language. And I think simply being aware of that as a parent and looking for some of those tendencies and just recognizing that small tweaks in wording or tone or just delivery in itself could make all the difference. And I'm sure you've seen that in your work as well. Do you have any advice for a parent that feels like they're speaking another language? You know, their child is just so different than themselves and you just have trouble getting through to them. Do you have any, you know, wisdom regarding that?
So yes, although I think whether you sort of speak the same language or you don't, in the sense kind of what you were talking about, one child is just like you and the other one isn't. My oldest daughter, I feel like in so many ways is very similar to me. That being said, I still get tripped up sometimes and I still get frustrated and have a difficult time connecting with her, partly because she's just like me and she's, you know, strong-willed and, you know, is a fighter and, you know, bullheaded sometimes, which is great for a lot of situations. Not all. And so, you know, one example actually just with not even with my private practice, but just in my own home was yesterday. My older daughter struggles with math. And so I've decided because she's in virtual school that I will sit with her during math class and be there to support her. And this is something that she and I decided together. And she's been working on fractions. And there are some times that I think she should be able to answer a question pretty quickly. And I look at her and I ask her, you know, well, what's the answer? And she's like, I don't know. And I was getting frustrated yesterday and she could tell I was getting frustrated. So we kind of went back and forth a little bit. And then at dinner time, when we were both feeling calm, I asked her, I was like, so what was going on earlier? I said, I was getting frustrated. I noticed that. I said, help me understand what was happening for you, you know, while you were doing your math. And she said, Mommy, she's like, sometimes I feel like a turtle in a race and I just need to go slow. And when you're sitting next to me, asking me and getting frustrated, I just can't think straight. And here I am, a parent coach, and still I was like, you're exactly right. You're 100% right. I was so happy to be able to take that time at dinner, because it was an intense time. We were far from math class, so we were all feeling calm and relaxed. I was able to ask some key questions to understand what her perspective was. And because there wasn't this active pressure or active stress, she was able to clearly articulate to me what was helpful about what I was doing and what was not helpful. And I think that is the key to communicating with our kids, when whether we speak their language or not, is to come from a place of being curious, not furious. Getting curious and asking questions. Maybe take some educated guesses to understand their perspective, offer some reflective listening so that we make sure Let me make sure I hear you. Let me make sure I understand where you're coming from. And then being able to move forward and say, okay, so what's our plan here? How are we going to handle this situation next time?
I love when you say curious versus furious, because it's true. So much comes down to asking questions. I've seen that. And I have to say, when you were giving your example, I feel like you could have been in my house yesterday with just a different subject, because it's just such a struggle. I was guilty of telling my husband when he walked in the door last night, like, I just hate homework. And I don't, you know, I try not to say that in front of them, because obviously I don't want them to have that mentality towards it. And it's just that moment of frustration. And so often we do just need to remove ourselves for a little while, breathe, and come back to it. And I feel like I'm learning that, but I just want other listeners to know that I feel like I screw it up more than I get it right. And so a lot of it is backtracking, kind of like you shared too. After going back and forth, you know, you kind of had to circle back to it and then ask those questions. So I think this is such a great lean into one of the points that I remember so clearly from the first time we met. And it was, you know, how do we handle meltdowns? That was one of the biggest things that people, you know, reached out and said that they struggled with. And I think it's such a wonderful tie into what you just touched on. So do you mind sharing what you had shared with me on what do we need to know about meltdowns and how to move through them?
Absolutely. So I do a whole workshop called Managing the Meltdowns. And there was this one time I was partnering with an organization and I sent them the information about the workshop I was going to do. And they changed the name to something like Avoiding the Meltdown. And I had to send an email back and say, respectfully, I'm not trying to teach parents how to avoid the meltdowns. I want them to learn how to manage them and to manage themselves, because we're not going to avoid them. They exist. And every time we try to fight it and not want it to happen, it just actually creates even more friction. So it's important to say, all right, the meltdowns are going to occur. What do I need to do for myself while my child is having the meltdown? And what do I need to do for my child while they are having the meltdown? And so that's just, you know, the first distinction I want to make. So we want to think about how the brain operates. Usually I do this visual with my hands, but since we won't, I'll do my best explaining it with my words. So if you ball your hand up into a fist and you put your four fingers over your thumb and you look at the fingers where your fingernails are, that's the top part of your brain. That's the thinking part of your brain that's able to negotiate organize, compromise, problem solve, all those great thinking skills. Underneath those fingers, where your thumb is folded in, that's the primitive part of your brain. That's the part of your brain that's responsible for fight or flight. And so what happens is a little stress comes along, some sort of frustration. And if you have your fingers folded over your thumb again, what happens is that little trigger flings the fingers straight up, which is called flipping the lid. And so the fingers go straight up, and what you're left with is the thumb, which is that fight or flight. So what happens is a child, let's say there's a set of siblings and the brother knocks over the Legos that his other brother is building. Well, that's the trigger. That's the stress. That's the frustration. The other kid's lid flips. And that's where we see fight or flight. They often fight back. They yell. Maybe they hit back. So the thinking part of the brain isn't intact. It's not working. It's not what we call regulated. The brain is not regulated. It's not working efficiently. And so as a parent, we try to intervene at that point and say, all right, guys, you need to use your words. Why don't you take a deep breath? And it doesn't often work because that thinking part of the brain is not active. And so what we need to do first and foremost is, which you just mentioned it before, is take a deep breath. And I know that sounds so easy, and it's super easy when we're not stressed, but when we're frustrated and we're seeing yet another fight between our kids or some sort of meltdown, it's harder to take a breath. But when we take a breath, we can slow down and we can think a little bit more mindfully about how we want to respond. And so that's the first thing we want to do is take a deep breath and think, what can I do here? Should I even do anything? Should I respond? In that moment of the meltdown, the goal really is to bring our child back to a regulated state in a way that they feel safe. And so we're going to communicate, whether it's with words or without words, maybe it's physically, you're safe, kiddo. You're having a meltdown. It's okay. I've got your back and I'm here for you. And we might do that by sitting next to them and not saying anything. Maybe we do say something. Maybe we say, it's all right, kiddo. I'm right here for you. Maybe we, again, don't say anything and instead we put our hands on their shoulders. We know our kids, so we know what is going to work. And so we find a way to bring them back to a regulated state where they're feeling calm, where their brain is now back intact and they can think straight. And when they can think, that's the opportunity we can say, okay, let's move forward and problem solve and see what happened here. But during that actual meltdown, we really just want to be mindful that we are giving off the energy of, it's okay, I am here for you. Feelings, especially big feelings, they come in waves. They come and they go. So we don't need to freak out that this meltdown is going to be there forever. It's going to come in like a wave and then it's going to dissipate. And so we want to be that sense of calm. What we want to be is the flagpole and not the flag, right? We want to be steadfast and give that child security. It's okay, because what happens is a lot of times these kids have these big emotional outbursts and it's scary for them. It's frightening because sometimes they're like, I don't know why I hit my brother. I just did it, because it's very scary and their body does take over, especially for the younger kids. So we want to make sure we are showing them what calm looks like. We all have something in our brains called mirror neurons, where our brains, and this happens unconsciously, but they actually mirror one another. So if I am in a heightened state, it is very likely that I will see my child in a heightened state. And in reverse, if I am in a calm state, my child is much more likely to come back down to a calm state. And so we just want to be really mindful of what is the energy we're giving off in this moment while they are feeling the chaos.
It's so hard. And I do think that that's the biggest struggle, is kind of getting sucked into that energy as well and contributing to the meltdown versus being the source of the calm, like you mentioned. I love the analogy of the flagpole and the flag. So often I'm like, I just want to be steadfast in my own emotions, because like you said, the wave, I mean, we all deal with that same wave of emotion. And I feel like some of us maybe a little bit more so. And I'm definitely in that boat. And because I've become more aware of these things within myself, I've been able to apply a lot of the same knowledge to my kids. And it's just been so helpful. But if I wasn't already working through those things on my own journey, I don't think I would have the tools that I need as a parent to handle them or manage them, you know, within my children. It's just so helpful to hear that breakdown and that explanation of different parts of the thinking centers, because it makes so much sense once you hear it. And when you take that moment to be that source of calm, not only for them, but for yourself, it's just so much better for everyone, right?
Totally. And it's hard work. I was actually reading just today, I happened to go through some emails from 2017 or 2016 when I was working with a parent coach and setting some goals. And one of the questions, you know, in the homework, she had said, what went well or what do you feel really good about? And I had said that I was able to take a pause and not have such a quick reaction. And hello, that's 5 years ago that I was doing that work. And still, it's something that I am still working on, because it's a muscle. We can't just build it up once and assume that muscle is going to stay strong. It's active work that we continually have to keep working at.
So I think this is a perfect time to take a little break. And when we come back, I am hopefully going to dig in with what I am personally facing. And I know other parents out there do as well. Come right back in a minute and we'll dig into that.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. In today's world, veterinary professionals have to stay current to stay relevant. That's why Vet Candy is launching master courses for continuing education. Courses are led by subject matter experts who guide participants through the latest research and cutting-edge technologies. The programs are free for veterinary professionals and can be accessed 24/7 on myvetcandy.com. Upon completion of a course, participants receive a Vet Candy Certificate of Completion, continuing education credits, and access to exclusive tools to help celebrate, recognize, and share your accomplishment. Want to learn more? Check out myvetcandy.com/certification today.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Maria Sanders, certified parent coach, and we are just talking about all the things come with parenting that could just be a struggle. And so at the beginning of this call, I joked that the reason we were doing this redo is because God knew that I would need my own help. And so I know that this was something I used to deal with when my girls were younger, but they're about to turn 7. And so it's really thrown me for a loop that it's kind of rearing its head again, but it's separation anxiety. And now that I have a little bit more information regarding the trigger of why this is happening, there was an event where my girls were at something within the church and they were moving rooms. And for a moment, one of my girls didn't see her teacher. And so she immediately thought that she was lost. There was no familiar faces anymore. She knew mom was gone. She knew her teacher was gone. And ever since then, she has this legitimate fear that she's going to get lost or we're going to leave her. And as much as I try to explain to her that that is not something she needs to worry about, it's just this ongoing thing that we've been struggling with. And so do you see this often as a reason for people to come to you for help? Do you have any insight if someone has a child, whatever their age, that tends to have that attachment and that fear associated with being away from a parent.
Absolutely. I think if there's an event like that, that definitely makes it a lot harder for both the parent and the child. So, you know, we can break it down into two things, kind of like I do with everything. One part is the parent's role and one part is the child's role. So for the parent, we just want to be mindful. Are we feeling any sense of guilt? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I turned my back for that minute and I, you know, quote unquote, lost her for that moment. This is my fault. We just want to be mindful of any feelings that we have. Also, in moving forward, are we bringing in a sense of anxiety to a situation? Like, oh no, we're going to go to another event. I'm afraid she's going to be nervous. And we're bringing in that anxiety. So we really, again, want to go back and just take that time to bring ourselves to a place of confidence and make sure that we're feeling good and whole about the situation. The other part has good. The other part has to do with the child. So the child is telling themselves a story, and the story is not going to change. It may often even get worse the more they tell themselves this story. You know, the story might be, I was in this church event and next thing you know, I couldn't find my family and I was lost and it lasted forever and I was so scared, and go on and on and on. And so we want to help our child retell the story and fill in the gaps and add in pieces that were actually, I don't want to say positive, but that kept them safe. So in this situation, you might want to hear your daughter retell the story. And as she's telling the story, and you can remind her, oh yeah, and you know, Miss Lucy was there and she saw that you were upset and that you didn't know where we were. And she was a big helper there, and identify who the helpers were who help your daughter find her way back to you guys. And so being able to retell that story in a way that can bring them to a place of more of resilience is going to be really effective, so that the memory isn't, I was completely lost. It was, I was lost momentarily and I found my way because of all these helpers.
That is so good. Like, really, I can't wait to just utilize this with her later today, because we have revisited the story. And like you said, there are people that I could kind of hang on to and focus on those positives and help her fill in the gaps. Because I know for me, if there's something going on and there's holes in it, my brain will automatically fill it in with the worst scenario possible. And I've gotten to the point where I recognize that. And so I will ask way more questions, if it's possible, to avoid that and fill in those gaps with truth. And so it just makes so much sense. And I know I'm not the only one that's going to benefit from that, but I'm so grateful that you took the time to honestly help us out, because it's just been a huge stressor. And again, making me aware of not bringing that stress into future events, because I'll tell you, I'm guilty of that. It's kind of been hanging over all of us. And so I love that I'm able to have a plan moving forward. And I think this is just such a wonderful example for our listeners, if they're entertaining reaching out to a parenting coach, reaching out to Maria, the approach you took. I like how you said, like, you use this approach for so many different things. And it just makes sense. I mean, to have that game plan again.
The other thing, oh, sorry, I just wanted to add, is because I know your girls are on the younger side, is art is a great tool to help do something like this. So sitting with her and saying, let's draw a picture of what happened, and let's, you know, and kind of filling in the blanks through the artwork might help her process it a little bit more than just using words, because sometimes words can be a little bit too much for a young child. So you can add that as a layer of support.
Oh, I love that. My girls love art, and I could definitely see how it would be easier for her to communicate how she's feeling through art versus trying to explain it, especially with her, because she tends to be my girl that does have more trouble expressing her feelings through words. And so I don't know why I've never thought of that, because like I said, they're constantly drawing, but to bring it in as a tool for problem solving is genius. You know, sometimes it just takes someone from the outside suggesting these little things, and then we could hold on to them, you know, going forward.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. Vet Candy IRL is an exciting podcast from the hearts, minds, and mouths of Shannon Gregoire, Tatiana Rogers, and Lexi Rodriguez. The show celebrates inspirational role models and focuses on empowerment and equality. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and more.
Next thing that I kind of want to shift to is, I feel like this is the most common thing that moms come to me struggling with, or, you know, voice that they just don't know how to handle it when they heard that I was going to be meeting with you. And it's mom guilt. This, I don't know, like weight that we carry that we're never doing enough, whether it's in the role of as a mom or as, you know, in our workspace or marriage, whatever it may be. But there's just always some kind of guilt associated with what kind of role we're playing within parenting.
Oh, it's so tough. I know that guilt, it gets in the way a lot and it comes up a lot. And I like to talk about, you know, coming from a place of confidence, but it's not that easy just to say that word and think that we can adopt it. And so figuring out what would that look like. And so a lot of times I do visualization activities with my clients because, for example, baseball players, they'll hire a visual coach to picture them hitting the ball out of the ballpark and, you know, a home run. And so the visual coach will say, you know, how are you standing? What does it feel like holding the bat? What does it smell like in the air? What does it sound like? What do you hear? Well, in the same way, I use that strategy with some of my clients. So if you were a confident parent, what would that look like? How would you know that you were feeling confident? What would you be saying to your child? What would you be saying to your friends and family? What would it smell like? Maybe if you're feeling more confident, you would feel more confidence in baking more or something like that, or mowing the lawn. And what would it look like? What would your interactions look like? What would it look like on your face if you were feeling confident? What would it look like on your child's face? And really getting really detailed about everything, because the more we can see where we're going, the more likely we are going to get there. So if I say, I want to go to Chicago, and I just hop in the car and I'm like, I think I have to go north and maybe west. Okay, maybe I get there, but I doubt it. So really having a clear goal as to what does that look like and how can I start taking little steps to feel more confident? We have so many categories of parenting. There is, you know, sleep routines, meal routines, education, playtime. So let's not take the whole entire thing at once. Let's break it down and say, okay, in the area of bedtime, am I feeling confident with regards to bedtime? If yes, great. If not, what part of it do I not feel confident? Do I feel really guilty? You know, bringing back that guilt and everything. Do I feel guilty about putting my child to bed and leaving them in the dark room or whatever it is? And just looking at that and saying, where does this come from? Where does it come from? Does it come from a place of fear that I have or some anxiety? Does this bring up some uncomfortable feelings for me? Because once we can start paying attention to kind of what triggers that reaction and response, then we can start to shift it a little bit more. We can get beneath the surface, start almost like diagnosing it ourselves to understand, where does this come from? What does this do? Is it helpful for me or is it not helpful for me to go along those, you know, this train of thought?
Yeah, there's so many points that you just shared that I love and I want to touch on. You know, so often I'm used to thinking of goals and that destination, you know, example of, you know, you're not going to get in the car and say you're going somewhere and not have a plan. But I don't know that I've ever really thought of it regarding parenting. And so again, just having someone from the outside saying that, and then specifically pointing out to just take on one part of parenthood, because I think so often we do lump everything together and there's just too many aspects of it. It's exhausting. When you were listing them, I was exhausted. I'm not even lying because it's true. But you also made me think of, and this is mainly my personal experience, but I think a lot of our listeners will be able to relate. So much of what I realized this guilt coming from is a perception of what I think is expected, whether it's from my mother-in-law or because I'm watching so-and-so make homemade cookies every night, whatever it is, this trap of comparison, but also like what we grew up around and in the expectations that are kind of subconsciously put on us through family. I think so much of that guilt arises from those places. And unless we start asking those questions, you know, why am I experiencing guilt? What are these triggers? Like you said, it's really hard to get to the root of it. And when you realize that some of those factors may be playing a part of it, then you could work towards, you know, focusing on that. Okay, well, I need to realize that what I see on social media is, you know, only a fraction of the picture. And I don't need to look like I run a Pinterest, you know, file or whatever. So it's just some good stuff right there.
Absolutely. And I always tell parents, there's no right way or wrong way to parent. There are plenty of parents who I work with who aren't totally sold on my approach necessarily. And, or they're like, well, should I stop doing this? Should I stop doing this way? And I always tell them, it just has to feel good. You know, in your gut, and you've got to trust your gut. Does it feel good? And does it look like it feels good to your child? So the way you handled that challenging situation, did you all come out okay? Well, then it's okay. You know, like we just have to just let go of all the, you should be doing this and the book says that. And, you know, Maria says, do this. It's like, just go back to the basics. Does it feel good?
Yes. You instantly made me think of all of the books I had when I was pregnant, trying to prepare for being a mother, and how much I think they actually hurt me more than helped me, because I went into it thinking that I needed to do all of these things a certain way and it had to look, you know, like whoever, you know, wrote about it in this book. And it's true. You have to find your own rhythm. And I feel like you do know when something's off. And that kind of leads me to my final question. How do you know when you need to reach out, whether it's to you or maybe even a step beyond your expertise? How do you know when you're at that point with your child?
When it doesn't feel good, right? When you're responding to your child and it just, you yell and you don't feel good about it and your child doesn't feel good about it. And you've said, you know, I've tried this way, I've tried that way. I'm just at a loss. And that is definitely a clear sign that it would be great to have some extra support, because you said it earlier, sometimes it's good to just have someone from the outside take a step back and say, okay, what can I see here? I'm not in the situation. So that's always great. So I have families who come to me who are in the middle of quote unquote crisis or significant challenging situations. I also have families who just come to me preventatively, proactively. Hey, we don't really have anything major going on, but I know my daughter's, you know, she's going into her teen years and I want to just get some support and guidance on how to handle some things that we may be dealing with, or we're about to move across the country. Can you give me some guidance on supporting my children with that kind of transition? Or, you know, there was a death in the family or something like that, that, you know, almost proactively we're saying, before I get underwater, let me have someone help me just get an idea of how to navigate these waters.
Man, if we could always just think a little bit ahead, things are so much smoother. I know so many listening can relate when it comes to like preventative care within like the veterinary field. Sometimes you feel like you're beating your head against the wall trying to explain why that's important. So it makes sense that you would work with both, you know, aspects. It doesn't always have to be people coming to you with a problem per se. I could talk to you all day long because I feel like there's so many different things that can fall into your expertise. I know this is just a glimpse of the surface, but why don't you share with our listeners how they could connect with you, how they could follow you if they want to get more information on working with you? How would they go about doing that?
So you can find me on my website, which is mariasandersparentcoach.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, and the handles are the same, Maria Sanders Parent Coach. And I have a newsletter, so you can sign up for the newsletter. I often have workshops, and what's great right now is my workshops are on Zoom. So wherever you're listening, you're welcome to join me for one of the workshops, as well as the parent coaching is on Zoom. So we can also connect that way.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Put the needle on the record.
Vet Candy Life is a talk show hosted by well-being gurus Dr. Quincy Hawley and Renee Michelle. Each episode features expert tips, lifestyle advice, and real-life experiences from the most interesting people in the world. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more.
I have to say that one good thing that's come out of the last year is being able to access people such as yourself, no matter where you're at, and just not being tied to a physical location. So I know you're going to have so many people that are going to find you, and they're just going to gain so much value from you and from listening today. And so thank you so much for being a guest again. Like I said, it's just so interesting to me. And so I love having you on, and I know our listeners have enjoyed this as well. And hope to maybe have you back in the future.
Absolutely. I would love to. This was a great chat.
All right. To our listeners, until next time, we will see you back with Living Well with Dr. Jessica. Y'all have a good day.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy. It's Vet Candy Radio.